Drew and Jonathan Scott here to tell you that American Family Insurance wants to protect your dreams. So whether you're at home singing in the shower,
every note,
or prefer singing your heart out in the car like Drew,
cruising,
you can save up to 23% when you bundle your home and auto insurance with American Family Insurance. Get a quote or find an agent at AmFam.com. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. It has been forever. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to be straight with you. I really wish I'd put up an episode sooner. Nobody likes the apologetic podcast host, but my goodness, it's been so long. I have to say something. And that is that clearly our production has dropped off in recent years. We went down to one a month and then one every 6 weeks. And now we haven't given you one since November. But I promise you, from the hardest part of my heart, Atlanta Podcast will continue for the simple fact that I live here and I'm always thinking about it, and there will be opportunities where things will come. So just keep this bloody feet around and I'll bring good stuff to your ears. Today's program is someone you have not heard of and someone that doesn't, in fact, live here. However, this show is the Atlanta Podcast. We interview the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, and anybody else I find interesting. And I am talking to my friend Tony today. Now, Tony is not somebody you've most likely ever heard of, but I knew he'd be great for this show. We hadn't spoken in 20 years, and I, other than the occasional FB message once in a while, how are you? I see you got this going on. Literally haven't spoken in over 20 years. And our relationship was actually for a really brief time 20 years ago. I just had a feeling, man, this guy would be so great to talk to, and he was. We ended up talking for over 2 hours. So you might have to take a couple of, cracks at this one. Couple of commutes, couple of runs, couple of workouts. That's fine. You can break it up. My feelings won't be hurt. I hit pause and keep on going. But you will also learn a lot about me. And if you like this show, if you're a fan of this show, it's probably because you know me at least a little bit. And you'll hear some of the LA stories I've kind of talked about in the past. But I think there's going to be a lot of new information as well. So I hope you enjoy this. And this guy, Tony, he's had a really cool life and done a lot of cool things. And we hit it off super well. So listen, not going to apologize anymore. Just really glad you're here and keeping this in your feed. And away we go. You're talking to me right now because of a job I had 21 years ago, which is nuts, right? That much time has passed and existed.
It is nuts. It is nuts.
But I want to lead up a little bit up to there.
Okay.
And you had a giant afro.
I did. It was beautiful.
And afros weren't cool. Like, you made it cool, but afros weren't like a thing. Like, now I think you can have one and it's pretty cool.
Isn't that the irony? Right, yeah.
But let's back up. You grew up, I'm guessing, in the suburbs of Chicago?
I did, yes. Northwest suburbs. And I moved to LA the day after high school graduation. I mean, it was a great place to grow up, but it was also an excellent place to leave.
To do what? So at 18, you moved to LA to do what?
To go to college. I mean,
which one?
I just went to Santa Monica College. I was not good in high school and I was not good in college either. But I knew I wasn't in high school. I knew I wasn't going to get to like a real college. So I didn't even apply. My grades were so bad. So I came to Santa Monica, went to Santa Monica College, pumped gas in Beverly Hills, sold TVs on commission. Like,
what year is this?
This was 84 to 87. It actually took me 2.5 years to get through junior college because I was so bad at college. But it was fantastic. I mean, it was good to be in a new city, not know anybody, start truly fresh. And I mean, I had no friends coming in here. I had no work experience. So like the only place that would hire me then was McDonald's. Then I worked at a record store, which was fantastic. Then I pumped gas.
But what was the goal? I'm coming to LA to do what?
Well, okay. My dad had lived in California. My parents were divorced. My dad had lived in California, and he had always asked me to live with him. He was like, come on, man, California's the place to be. And I was like, I got a lot of friends, and, you know, you always have a crush on a girl or something like that. And so finally I said, okay, I'll move with you to California after high school. And about a year and a half into it, he and my stepmom were like, Tony's too much. He's out. I was like, you beg a kid for years to move in. And then after a year, you're like, nah. And so whatever. My first apartment was on Venice Beach. I mean, it's like, it's hard. I mean, I understand how some people can't make the transition in LA from somewhere else, but oh, boo hoo, I get kicked out of my house and I have to live a block from the beach in Venice. You know, like everything was fine. Everything was perfectly fine. And you know what? It was a different time though. Rents weren't what they were then as they are today. Today, it might be very hard for a 17-year-old kid to afford an apartment.
Don't they still have rent control places?
Yeah, but guys like me have been sitting in one for 20 years. In fact, right after People's Support, I moved into the apartment that I'm in now.
Which is what town?
This is Hollywood. So I've lived here for 19 years in this apartment with rent control.
But like what, like be specific, Hollywood is big. You don't have to give me the address, but give me like
East costumes. Hollywood, you know where the Scientology church is, the big
yes.
Blue one across from Kaiser Hospital? Yes. I live right next door to that big blue Scientology building.
So like, is that near Beechwood?
It's a little bit more east of Beechwood. Beechwood is the celebrity center.
Right.
The pretty one. This one isn't as pretty, but it's huge.
So I almost said my girlfriend, but in fact, my wife.
Congratulations.
Who lives in this house with me. She lived on Beechwood. I got evicted from my apartment. This is hilarious. Okay. My rent was $325 a month and I got evicted. So how broke do you have to be? So I moved in with her. Really bad move on her part. We look back and it's like, dude, there were red flags everywhere. I had just been evicted and moved in with her. She should have run screaming. But then we together got evicted from her place on Beechwood because we couldn't afford it together. So we ended up on Sycamore. The last place we lived was Third and La Brea, Sycamore-ish area.
Yeah. So Beechwood up in the hills? No.
Like three up from the gas station. Like the gas station was here. It's a Chevron, I think, or a Shell. And then she was like the first building up, not in the hills.
But still, I mean, you're on your way up to like that. I think that that's a nice part of town. Although now they're just homeless all over the place.
Oh, really?
Like crazy homeless over there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, she actually, the guy at that gas station would give her and occasionally me like in advance, like on cigarettes or Gatorade. Like this guy's name was Masoom. So shout out to Masoom, wherever you are, you know, whatever. My wife is pretty. So he gave her like, hey, give me next week kind of thing. You know what I mean? And so then I was there and I was like, hey, can you? And so, yeah. Did you smoke? I haven't smoked in a long time, but did you smoke?
I've never been a cigarette smoker.
Okay. Okay. I don't care if you smoke weed. You can say so.
No, it's legal. I don't care either. I'm just saying.
Hang on 1 second. What was that? Yeah. In a bit. Yeah. So real quick, we're going to get to all this, but Tony, I have three children now. I have a wife. I have three fucking children.
Congratulations.
Not really. Not really. Not during the pandemic. It's fucking horrible. We'll get to how horrible my life is. But what were you doing? So let's just, there's a lot to cover. So so I met you in the fall of 99. What were you doing right before that? Before People Support began, what were you doing?
You know, this is, I was not expecting this. First of all, it's great to hear from you again and see you. I was living in San Francisco from 1994 to 1999.
Okay.
And I was doing a lot of different things up there. And I had a beautiful girlfriend. I had friends all around me. I had my own business. On the side, I sold beer at Candlestick Park for the Giants. Like, I had like a really full life. But I was unsatisfied. And I had also been reading the Bible since since college. And I just happened to be reading in the New Testament this story that got repeated three times about a rich prince who also was unsatisfied. And he asked Jesus, what do I do? And Jesus was like, sell it all and come follow me. And the rich prince was like, nah. And so I was like, I think I'm going to sell it all and just hit the road. And I sold a lot of the stuff. And my girlfriend was like, are you crazy? And my friends were like, are you crazy? Sure, we'll take all of your CDs for $1 each. And I had a giant TV, like everything I had. I tried to get rid of. The only thing that they wouldn't take back was my Ford Explorer. The dealer was like, you're crazy. And the leases don't work like this. So I drove to Mexico and then I came to LA and I had an old girlfriend here and I crashed on her couch. And the first ad that I saw for work was for a customer support online startup. And it was people support. And I was one of the first like seven e-reps that they had. We all were in one little tiny room in Century City. And it was, hey, can we make this thing happen? And I mean, Lance and Dave, the founders of that company, are friggin' geniuses. And together, they made a company work during the dot-com boom when most companies did not work. And one of the genius things that they did was they said, Tony, hire everybody. And I was like, I've never hired anybody in my whole life, but I feel like I can kind of tell if somebody's full of shit or not. And I don't think it's that hard to do. Just don't hire the assholes. And LA is a huge place. So take your time and hire interesting people who understand the computer. I built a couple of just rudimentary tests that we could screen people on, like really easy. But I just wanted to make sure that I talked to every single person who we thought we were going to hire and make sure that it was the right move. And I ended up hiring over 400 people. And I only made, I think, about four or five mistakes. And I mean, that's...
Well, we're going to talk about one of those mistakes, Tony.
Who would that be?
Well, there's so much, dude. It's wild though, too, because you just described a ton of stuff, right? And I'm like that too. I've had a million jobs. I've lived a bunch of places, but certain things stand out. And like, why do you have those memories? Like, do you ever think of something that happened when you were a kid, and you're like, did that happen or did I dream that? Because you're just not, especially by the time you get to our age, right? And you sound like you're a few years older than me. Like, I graduated high school in '90, so
okay, I just turned 54.
Right, so I'm 48, right?
Yeah.
So again, which is fucking nuts to me, right?
I agree. Totally agree.
I say to my wife, we're almost 50. She's like, shut up. You are. I'm not. Even though she is too.
Well, because probably like you, I feel like I'm 18 inside. Like every now and then I'll do something and it'll hurt my back for a week. But other than that, I feel like I could kick anybody's ass outside if I needed to.
You totally could. You totally could, Tony. So my friend, Eric Boso... Do you remember?
Love Eric.
I love Eric, and I haven't spoken to him in a while, and I'm a little worried about him, actually, because he hasn't responded. I've texted him a few times. We can get to that. But the only person I knew was my friend Eric, okay? I moved to LA to be, I was doing stand-up, and I was like, I'm going to get famous. I'm going to get laid a lot. I'm going to do all these crazy drugs. Like, I had that Hollywood dream.
That's a good dream.
And I went to Eric's house, and I stayed on the couch, and after like 3 weeks... His roommate was like, well, you got to go. And I was like, I don't even have a job yet. So Eric was like, hey, I got a job at this amazing place. Go to this temp agency. You'll get hired to the temp agency. And then after like 2 weeks, they'll buy you out and you'll get hired. And as I recall, like, it was like a good wage for those of us that like have no diploma, no anything. Like, I don't remember what it was, but I remember it being like several dollars higher than like a regular entry level job.
That's right. Yes.
Like it was like 12 or 15 when most jobs were 9 or 10. I don't know what people make now, so I don't know. But I remember it being good.
Well, the people are fighting to get $15 an hour now. Like in Congress, they're like, let's raise the minimum wage to 15. And the Republicans are like, boo, bullshit. You're right. 1999, we started at 12 bucks an hour.
Right.
And if you could pull it off after 90 days and not fuck up,
right,
you made 15.
Right. So, so here's what I want to tell you that happened to me. Okay. And again, I have no idea where I fit in these gazillion memories you have. Cause again, mine are so strong from that time, probably cause I had just gotten to LA and that's a big deal. Right.
Yeah.
So I work there and like, it's going like fairly well. Like there was a thing you could become like, not a manager, but like some sort of bump you got almost right away if you were had a fucking clue. And I got that and I was like, all right, well, this is great.
Yep.
But then things started slowly turning. And what was his fucking name? It'll come to me. This fucking guy like had it out for me, I guess.
Was he a manager?
Yes, he was an actual manager.
Was it Amir?
Not, I want to say Arthur. He was like a little Spanish dude.
I think his name was Amir.
I don't think I would have remembered.
It wasn't a Persian guy?
No, there was a Persian guy who was upset that I dated the girl that he liked. That was another thing.
When I was hiring everybody, I was like, "Hey, look, we're still not paying a lot of money."
Right.
We're paying enough money for young people, but we're not paying a lot of money. So, we've got to do things to keep them excited. First thing is, I've got to make sure that I hire a bunch of hot girls. Also, we got to make sure that we've got parking. Also, we got to like have like free pop in the place, you know, right. Like it's got to feel like a real .com, even though it's not a .com. It's really just a call center, you know?
Right. But you did have, whatchamacallit that I used to play.
Video games. Yep. Right, Sega Dreamcast.
Right. So that was like, and that's what I like, my experience of it was like, cool, I got to be part of that .com 1.0 because it was 1999 before the crash.
That's right.
And it was a lot of young people and it was kind of fun and you had those game thing. Here's the problem for me, Tony. Problem.
Yeah.
My big ideas of getting loaded and getting famous and all that, LA allows you to hit bottom so fast that I got sober right away when I got to LA. Okay. So I'm still sober, by the way, 21 years later.
Hey, that's an accomplishment right there, man.
But dude, I don't know if you know anything about 12-step or anyone in recovery, but early sobriety is like, you're a fucking nutcase. So I was an emotional nutcase. Okay. So I'm dating what's her name? I slept with what's her name. Really cute. I can't think of her name.
There's a lot of pretty girls there.
Right. Good job.
Yep.
I can't think of any of their names. Bosa okay. I would remember. But one of the managers I know liked her, and so that was a whole thing. But then the guy – but here's the thing. Here's what I want to tell people about you is that you are what HR should be. Like HR, unfortunately, is usually some like boomer lady that has no fucking people skills at all, and every answer is like, well, listen, nobody's to blame, blah, blah, blah. You were like – you know, the term we used for you is camp counselor, right?
Thank you.
Right? Like just this guy that everyone could talk to and he was just going to like talk to you. Like we really revered you for that and I appreciate you. And so people had all these problems with me and you were like, here's the deal, bro. You got a lot of East Coast going on and a lot of these people do not know how to take you. Do you remember this? Do you have any recollection of this?
That does sound like me, but I don't remember. No. I've smoked a lot of pot between now and then.
Dude, but I couldn't understand it because I just like, what do you mean? What do you brought? I don't know any way to be, but to be like on 10, straightforward, no bullshit, East Coast, whatever, you know, which is great. But as you grow older, you understand that there's things called diplomacy, politics. You learn how to like pick your battles and not everything is like, you're a fucking idiot. Dude, but that's basically my answer to everything was you're a fucking idiot and couldn't understand why people didn't like me.
Well, I mean, okay, in customer service, that might be getting close to the danger zone.
No, I was fine with the customers. I was good on the chat. It was the people in the office.
And in an office, that might be close to the danger zone. But we hired people like Paul Kim and Sam Kim, who were these sweet Korean boys who, when they looked around, they were like, hey, Tony, can I hire some of my friends from our church? And I was like, fuck, yes, you can. Like, bring them all in. So, like, for every Matt that there was East Coast on 10, I probably had like 8 Korean kids who were just the opposite, who were, you know, who's the neighbors of the Simpsons, you know,
the Flanders,
the Flanders is. And so I felt like it was a good mix. And sometimes people do need to get a little reality thrown their way.
You gave me the perfect advice. I just didn't know how to take it as a on 10, 24-year-old, just got sober, out of my mind. Like, my way is the only right way to do things. Why is everyone else so stupid? Like, you were just, you handled it. You gave me great advice. I just couldn't hear it. But the problem was this kid, was it Arthur? Was there an Arthur?
I don't remember any Arthurs. Dude. And you say he's Indian?
No. Italian? He was not Mexican, but brown. Something brown. Anyway, the problem was that he literally, so this is what happened. I did have some sort of revenge because the day came that they were like, you know, I had one thing for being late, like I overslept, and then one other thing happened, and then it was like a 3-strike shot. Whatever the third one was, he just made up. And I remember I had to go upstairs and sign my thing and get my final check.
Wait. Was this in the old building or in the new building?
This was on, whatchamacallit?
Westwood?
In Westwood, yeah.
So the one where it was the 3-story building or 4-story building with the garage underneath?
There was glass windows. We didn't get parking, at least us lowly people did. I had to park in the neighborhoods, which had neighborhood parking.
Yeah, this was probably about a year or two into it. So, okay. So I was probably in that building. Like, did you have to talk to me to sign anything?
But but I came to you after like the second strike and you were like, hey, learn to chill out or whatever. So this happens. I literally turned to him because he had to walk me out because he was the manager guy.
Yeah.
Cutting in and out. That's a weird sound. Is it good? Okay. And I looked at him and I literally turned to him and I said, why did you do this?
Yeah.
And he couldn't answer. He couldn't look at me because he knows he had fucked me. But here was the good news. Oh, you know who else worked there was Burson. You remember Michael Burson?
I do, yes.
So Burson told me, because Burson and I ended up living in his building. I lived in the same building as Burson and Bill Cott. Bill Cott, who's gone on to do a bunch of improv stuff. He lived in that building too. Anyway, he told me that like either a week or two later, he had disappeared with like phones and laptops and like you guys couldn't find him. So I was like, you guys made the wrong fucking move firing me and keeping that fucking asshole.
Well, okay, so here's... I am willing to take responsibility for 95% of the hires, but this guy does not ring a bell. And I would love to know his real name to see if I actually, because I'll tell you what, I did have some people at the quasi manager level that of the e-reps who I felt like didn't have the right attitude either. Right. And I was like, this isn't jail. You don't have to treat these people like fucking assholes.
Right.
Like they are, the e-reps are the heart of the fucking company, no matter what you think.
Right. We need to back up and explain to people what an e-rep is, because this is 1999. This is early internet. So why don't you explain what it is?
It's a very basic concept. When you're buying things online, like let's say you're at Amazon, and you put some pots and pans in your cart and some underwear and you know, and a bong if you can. A very high percentage of people don't complete the sale. And so all this stuff is left in your shopping cart. And so Dave and Lance had this idea. If there was a button in that shopping cart experience where you could just ask one or two simple questions, that will probably get you over the hump and help you buy the thing. And they were totally right. Most people only had I don't know where I'm shipping this. I want to ship it to my mom or whatever it is. And we can train people to answer basic questions for sure. And maybe even not so basic questions. And so we had all these clients and either they would click the button and in a live chat, somebody lovely like you would show up and say, hello, how can I help you? And you could probably answer the question very easily. We also answered a ton of emails because sometimes people were like, hey, I want to buy this, but I'm not sure. Or, hey, I bought this, but it's not working. Whatever it is, we could handle all that email questions too. And then we also had phone, just regular.
So that's what I was on. I was on the first phone team.
Great.
And there were only like 10 of us. And this kid is the one who got to be the manager. Like, all right, one of you is going to be the manager. And ended up being him. And I was really pissed off because I certainly should have been him. And then he ended up being the dick. Dude, so not your fault. I'm just saying. But here's what's hilarious about that. People would call up and say, I don't want to put my phone, my credit card into the computer. Can you take my number? And all we did was enter their credit card into the system because we were looking at the exact same screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is amazing to think that people would be afraid, because everyone listening to this, their credit card is in 100 carts right now.
It's everywhere.
Right?
It's everywhere. Every Russian teenager knows where you live.
Right. That's why people are like saying they're going to get off Facebook. I'm like, what are you talking about? Get off Facebook. Have you ever used Google Maps once? Have you ever used Amazon once? Great. They've got everything they need to know about you.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the phone team was rare. Like, we were the first ones. And,
that's right.
And it wasn't even that busy. Like, you would sit there for hours because you only had like 6 clients. So see if you can remember these early clients. Tavolo, which was a cooking website. Armani Exchange.
Yes.
Who are the other ones? Oh, remember they wanted all the Armani reps to have Armani names?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, like, remember there was a kid, there was a blonde kid named, you know, Brett or something. Like, great, he can use his real name. Everyone else had to use a fake name, like Armando or something fake.
Wow. Yeah, this is, I was probably doing other, like, I had to hire like a whole bunch of people in St. Louis. So it had probably like spiraled out of control, but at this point. That I was that out of touch, because I would have called bullshit on that too.
Oh, they don't use fake names? But here's what else I remember. Here's what else I remember, though. I went into your office once, and you had like two PC hard drives, right?
Okay.
Like two towers, which no one had. No person had that. You had a laptop or a PC. And I go, what is that? And you're like, oh, I'm downloading music. And I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that was like Kazaa or what was the Napster.
It was like pre-Napster, I think. Or maybe it was Napster and you were like Kazaa. And you were like, yeah. So think of it this way, Tony. You were using their broadband, right?
Oh, great.
Do you still have all those songs, do you think?
Fuck yeah. I think I am right here.
Look, he's going to get audio listeners. He's just gotten up.
Yeah, I think these are remnants of those. Let's see what I got here.
Oh, are these discs you have?
Yeah. Howard Stern. I downloaded a lot of Howard Stern shows. Backyard Wrestling videos. Remember Backyard Wrestling?
I do.
Yeah, jazz. Yeah, because, well, part of it was for the overnight people. We didn't have a lot of traffic on the overnight shift.
Right.
If you had downloaded the music, you would have been busted. So what I did was I would burn CDs for people. I'd say, hey, what do you want? And then remember the MP3 player, Winamp, it was a little tiny program that could play your music. So I would take requests. I would say, hey, what do you want me to burn? And I'd burn CDs for people because it was a very fun job, and it wasn't hard for me to do that job, really. I rode my bicycle to work. I lived so close. I mean, it was a dream. And to be able to hire, like, kind of in a weird way to create this like little mini universe of interesting people is, you know, probably what Hitler wanted to do. But imagine if you wanted to do it in a nice way,
right,
of nice
right.
people, right. you know, and. And it was also fun that the bosses understood what I wanted, which was let's have nice, interesting, diverse people in there
right.
who could do anything. And I'll tell you, I hired outside of, like, we had a PhD in there. Like, we had like some people who should not be in there, but they too wanted to work in a place with fun people. And so that's why it bothers me that there was a boss in there that was a dick, because I would have sat him down and say, who the fuck cares who Matt is boning? I'm about to hire like 100 more people.
Right. But that wasn't it. Unless he was in cahoots with the other guy. It wasn't it. Cause he was not, she wasn't.
But that just goes against it all. Like the whole dream was, if you do well, then you get to be the boss down the road.
Right.
And I don't want it. I never wanted people to have the idea, oh, to be the boss, you got to be a dick. Like, that's not the dream. The dream is
I'm going to message, see if they'll answer now. I don't know if I'm still on with Burson or not.
Okay, good. I need to know this guy's name because it just sucks that happened to you.
I want to say Arthur. But
I mean, it is our
same thing with an A.
Okay. I mean, okay. So eventually they hired this like former Marine, like this older guy. And that might have been right before you got hired, because they were like, okay, so Tony's hired all these people, these young people, and there's other young people being the manager. Don't we need an adult? Right. Don't we need like, and especially with investors and stuff, you want to kind of like show them a tour, and it's kind of, it's cute if it's a cute Hawaiian girl who's like showing you the tour, but if it's a, it's a, it's like a man, maybe it's more impressive. So we got this man, and I was like, no offense to the man, but this is not what .com is about. This is, he's kind of scaring the people. And like his answer to everything was time management, Tony. Right. And I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck that means. Like, what do you mean? Like, the problem is the guy is using porn in the back. Like, what is, how is the answer time management? And he's like, well, if you had good time management, that wouldn't happen. And I was like, no, so when I say there was about four bad apples, that guy looking at porn in the back was one. That's what Kip would come into my office. Tony, there's a guy who's watching porn in the middle of the night. And so I would say to the, I brought the guy in and I said, you know, this is an internet company. And so we can tell if you're watching porn.
Did he come clean about it?
No. He's like, well, that's good because I'm not. And I'm like, okay, let me say it another way. You're fucking watching porn at work. And I've been very horny in olden times, but not that horny that I've got to watch it at work. And we know that it's happening. Maybe it's embarrassing for you to admit it to me, but if it happens again, I'm going to see you again and we're going to have the same exact conversation, except you're going to go. And I'm going to be mad at myself for hiring you because I'm under this belief that I can see into people's hearts. And I thought that your heart was pure. And I get it. Boobies are great, man. They're fucking great.
Right.
But not at work.
Right.
Like you can look at anything else except for porn. Watch baseball if you want. Watch football. But we can tell when you're watching porn and it's not cool and you're going to get fired. We had to fire him. He did it again. And so another funny one was we had to fire this woman who used to work in the Army. And she did not like her boss. And while we're firing her, so I asked about the building. So the building, like you said, the HR offices were a couple floors up.
No, you were on our floor. You were in the first building. Like, you were on our floor.
Yes, I was, with Christmas lights and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so maybe this was later, but the real HR ended up being on like the third floor. And so we had to do the dirty deed down there, and parking was on the bottom floor. So all this, so we fire her, we're in the elevator with her, and then we're going down into the basement. But the doors open on the first floor, and her boss, who reported her, just happens to be waiting for the elevator. The doors open. He's there. She's next to me, and she just pops him one and knocks him out.
What? Why did she report him, or why did he report her?
She also had a chip on her shoulder, and she had done something wrong. I mean, that was a legit firing, but it was also a legit right hook too. I mean, I was like, wow, you learned something in the Army. That was a good punch.
That's impressive.
So I learned a very important lesson on that one too.
So you know what though, you guys, like the St. Louis thing, you were like, hey Matt, we're flying people out there and you can make this much money and blah blah. And I was like, this sounds great. Again, like young and crazy and whatever. And my AA sponsor at the time was like, listen, I'm not telling you not to go, but you've got like 60 days sober and maybe packing up and moving isn't the best thing. And I was like,
good advice.
Oh, exactly. And I was like, okay, you're right. And so I did not go. And then I got fired wherever it was from fucking asshole. What's his name? But let me ask you this. Cause you said, this was 1999 and .com was over by like mid 2000. And then 9/11 happens. So like what did happen?
What happened was a couple of bad things happened. First of all, little did I know, and maybe it wasn't always the plan, but at some point behind my back, they decided that they could get a guy like Matt for $1 an hour in the Philippines.
So they went, I remember hearing something about that, Philippines. Yes. Yeah. Philippines was a thing.
It was. It's still a thing.
Before India. Before India even, right?
That's right. That's right. Because the Filipino accent for the Tavolo, can you imagine? Yes, my name is Armando.
No, Armando is only for Armani, you needed a good name.
That's what I'm saying. Can you imagine an Indian guy trying to fake that he had a good name?
Right.
Or a good name?
Right.
You know? So they were like, okay, for whatever reason, they decided not to do India. They decided to do the Philippines. And the Filipino people were super duper sweet. And you can get them for $1 an hour. And there's this, by the way, I know all of this third hand. I don't know anything really about
You weren't on the front lines. They didn't send you to the Philippines?
No, because I was still doing St. Louis.
Okay.
They had a different group that was doing the Filipino stuff. And so I met a few of them and I would make training documents. Little did I know I was making training documents to replace myself.
Ah, that old trick.
And so I had always told them, I was like, whatever happens, because I kept getting promoted. It was the only job that I've been promoted 3 times. I went from E-rep to like recruiter to then manager of global recruitment, like some crazy thing that wasn't truly true. I mean, I was still hiring in St. Louis. But they said that these people that we were hiring for $1 were college educated and they had their own drivers because the disparity of money in the Philippines is so hard that you and I would have personal drivers even if we had worked for $15 an hour, because there's a level of people who would be more than happy to work for peanuts to be our maids, to be our drivers and stuff like that. The Filipino class system is totally out of whack. And so you could hire customer service people for $1 or $2 an hour who are very happy with that money because that's the middle class. And all you needed was $2 an hour to live in the middle class because there's all these people working for pennies out there. So they transitioned everything over there. And when they really did it, they fired me. And I was like, I always told you I would work just to demote me back to being an E-rep because the E-rep is the heart of the company. And also, we had stock options, remember?
Oh, yes. Well, I never earned mine. You had to be there 4 years to get yours, right?
For them to vest, you probably only needed to work there for a year to start accumulating them.
Okay. I made it a season. You know, I made it 3 months. So so anyway, what did you have?
That blows my mind because you are so firmly put in my head that I would have, if you said I'd worked there 2 years, I would have believed you.
Yeah,
like you are that big of a personality that
well,
I would.
Thank you, Tony. Well, this is why I ended up doing this for a living.
Well, perfect.
But totally so perfect. So which I want to talk to you about, and this is kind of how I roll. I go all over the place. But okay. This is the thing, Tony. You're like, if I was an early investor in Tony, it would have paid off, right? Because you were downloading music, you were on the blogosphere before anyone. You rode a bike before anyone. Like, you're so ahead of it all, right? This is what all the hipsters do now. So if I Google Tony Pierce people support, I get your blog post from 2009 when you left or whatever, which is, so this, you have one of those old school web pages, right?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you built that yourself.
Not the one that you're seeing now. No, I paid $1,000 for the one that you see now.
The one with 10,000 links on it that looks like a web page from 2000?
Oh, that page. That page I did build myself. Yes. That was a ripoff of how Yahoo used to look.
Right.
That was a Yahoo parody or whatever. Right.
But I'm guessing when you got fired, could you talk? Was it the two main guys? Could you walk in and say, what the F, guys? Like, what's happening here? Because they knew you from the early days?
No. I mean, it was a shocker. It was a total shocker. They were like, okay, you're the global recruiting guy, but we don't need you anymore. And I was like, I wrote the ads. I dressed up as the button. I put green face mask on. Like, all these people here, like, are you crazy? And they're like, no, here's some like severance package that was, I mean, money is money, you know? So that was fine. But I had really put my whole heart into this. And so I came home. I rode my bike home like a schmuck. And and I built a new webpage that just had the people support hand. And if you click and it said buy, that was it. It's a white page with the hand and it said buy. And when you click the hand, Czar's song, I Don't Want to Break Up, would play. And so it spread all around the office that Tony got fired. And they're like, what? And so they go to my website and they click that. And reportedly, people just started crying. And the song was just blasting through all the different because at that point, we had three different floors of customer service people. And people would write me emails. And I said, if you tell anybody, tell them to hire me back, I'll be an E-Rep again. That wasn't bullshit. I don't bullshit people. It's so much easier to tell the truth and like keep it real to me than to bullshit people.
Right.
And so they're like, really? Like, cause I think I was making like 65 grand as worldwide guy. And they're like, you're willing to make 15 bucks again? I was like, I told you this is yes. So they hired me back.
They did.
And yes. And when I showed up, people were like clapping and at Westwood Brewing Company. As we expanded, we went into another building up Westwood a little bit, and we would always drink at the Westwood Brewing Company, which doesn't even exist anymore. Because
I didn't stand up there. They had like Tuesday night open mic there.
Yeah. So, you know, the place.
Yeah.
Great. How funny. So anyway, so they hired me back but that only lasted for about 6 months because then they just wiped out all of America. And so I was laid off again. And here's the thing. I did not vest my stocks because I was like, this company is fucking stupid. Fuck this company. And turned out they went public. And that money, I would have made at least six figures. I mean, I would have made because I had a lot of stock.
What did you have to do to vest it?
I think I had to pay like $3,000 because I had like something like 50,000 shares at like 8 cents. And to vest it, you had to like buy them at maybe 20 cents. And I was like, these aren't worth a penny. These people are fucking idiots. Like, right. Fuck them all.
Right.
Because they've grown so big. Not the founders, Dave and Lance, but like all the like people that they had just hired for the layers, you know? And I was like, this is a joke. I don't want to give them $2,000, $3,000. And I'm telling you, that $3,000 would have been at least 100 grand.
But that's if you'd cashed out when it was at its highest.
If I had spent the $3,000, actually owned them, and then waited for them to go public, and then cashed out. So they ended up going public. Years
later. But they're not still around, though.
Yes.
They are still
not
around.
Not as people support, but as another company, they're still around. In fact, Lance has a company now called support.com. He bought the URL support.com, or somebody did, and he's the boss.
So, but I'm saying that, okay, so let's say they go public and you're like, this is great. It's worth all this money, but that's today. Now I can hold on to it and be worth even more. You know what I'm saying? Now it's got to be down.
Yes. And I don't know if support.com is people support or if he branched out and did his own thing. But if you go to support.com, it's Lance as the CEO and it says over 20 years of experience. It's crazy.
The world's home sourcing leader for customer support. There you go.
And check this out. Check out what he's doing now. We don't need a building anymore. He's like, do it from home.
Right.
So let's say they're still paying 15 bucks an hour. People will be way into that, especially guys like you with kids. You know, it's like, sure, I'll answer the stupid questions in my bedroom or in my office or in the garage or whatever. So he has figured out how to do that same thing, but to be able to do it from home.
That's crazy. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but somebody would.
Right. But I mean, if we were 25 again, we would.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Now you miss out because what I tried to do, and I think it happened.
This is when they look cute.
Oh, hey, buddy.
Hey.
This is River.
River.
Now, if you ask me who he's named after, I will say River Phoenix, obviously. Yeah. But my wife disagrees. She's like, we did not name him after River. I'm like, yes, we did.
Who does she think he was named after?
Just that he has a cool name.
Do you know who River Phoenix is?
No.
I've showed you a couple times. Where are you guys going?
We just went.
No, church. you just said you're going to the bike shop. Hang on a second. You just said you're going to the bike shop?
No. Are we going to go to the bike
shop? No, we have to wait for them to call us back.
Look what I'm listening to right now. I don't know.
Oh, you can't tell with your what do you call it?
This book is called Last Night at the Viper Room, which is about River Phoenix.
Yeah, he really isn't, but it's just cool that he is, so I tell people that he is, because it's kind of cool, right?
It's a great name, and maybe it's good that you are not telling him, because what I'm reading in this book is his parents were in this crazy cult that was kind of like a sex cult a little bit, too. It's kind of like the Children of God. And
oh yeah, I've heard of them.
And that's why his name is crazy. And like Joaquin, his younger brother, they just wanted a Spanish name. They're not Spanish. They're very wacky parents.
Did you watch The Joker?
Oh dude, how great was that movie?
I don't know. I really liked it, and I liked that it was not all the Marvel movies. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'd watch it again, but I mean, I thought it was good.
I haven't watched it again. What I did was this last year I was working for a website called Los Angelino, and I ended up interviewing a psychiatrist who deals with people like the Joker, criminally insane murderers.
Right.
So and she's like this intense black woman. And so she does not give a fuck. Like, she's the perfect person to interview. And so I was like, and if you remember in The Joker, his shrink was black.
Right.
And so I was like, so we ended up talking for like an hour and a half about The Joker, because she was way into it and thought it was super real. And she understood, I mean, even though it's fictional, she understood how you can laugh and cry at the same time. Like, there's a psychiatric thing.
Dude, my grandmother used to say to laugh is to cry.
Yeah. But the Joker would do it in an evil way. And so she was like,
well, he has a condition. I mean, he has a condition.
That's right. And she explained that condition. She explained like the whole thing as if he was like a real guy. And that was our most popular story in 2019.
Well, so if I look at your LinkedIn, which does not have people support, I'm surprised. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, it would if people gave a shit what I did 20 years ago.
Yeah. but so you've been writing. You've been writing and blogging like since basically like the last 20 years.
Yeah. So after People Support, I ended up at E, because one of the HR ladies at People Support ended up at E. And so I was like, hey, are there any jobs? And she got me a closed captioning job.
Sounds thrilling.
The boss goes, you're going to cry in this job. I was like, oh, cause the stuff is so sad. And they're like, no, you're going to cry, because the work was shitty and he was shitty. And sure enough, like 2 weeks later, I'm crying on my lunch break. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to quit or get fired anyways. And you were talking about my webpage looking like Yahoo, because I learned HTML, enough of HTML. I was no expert. And so I was hand coding all these pages, and blogging shows up right as I was leaving People Support. And I was like, why do I need a blog? I'm using the whole screen on my website, and whatever, kids were using blogs. So I was like, fine, I'll have a blog and I'll beat your fucking asses, all of you. And so I started blogging at work at E, and within a couple of months, my blog had blown up. Like, it was on like a million people a month were reading my stupid ass blog.
That's huge.
Partially because of 9/11. I started my blog in August of 2001. 9/11 happened a month later. And anybody who was halfway decent in blogging, because there wasn't a lot of us, got a lot of hits and a lot of traffic. So I was blogging my ass off. So all through E, I was blogging because I didn't give a fuck about getting fired, which is you're a creative person. I feel like creativity needs freedom and it needs a lack of fear. And the less afraid you are of your girlfriend being pissed at you, your bosses firing you, all that shit, if you don't give a fuck, you can make the most creative shit ever. Your heart really can't come out. And that's what happened at E. I did not care about being fired at all. So I would have, my boss would be like, I see you, you're blogging. Just like I was with the porno guy. He's like, I know what you're doing. And I was like, boss, me working and me blogging looks exactly the same. So I'll tell you what, back then I had a fro. I go, I'm going to make a hat and I'm going to wear the hat whenever I'm on a break. And that way, you know, okay, that fucker is blogging. And so I wrote all of this out on my blog and I created a trucker hat because trucker hats were big back then. And it said break cap. And I go, anytime I got my break cap on, I'm blogging. So leave me the fuck alone. And anytime I got my Cubs hat on, I'm working for you. So leave me the fuck alone. And then I told the story on my blog and I sold the blog caps on my blog and I made a fucking shitload of money off of that.
For how much?
And he was more pissed because he's like, you're using me. I was like, fuck yeah, I am. Because there was a lot of kids that were blogging at work at that time. That was the best time to blog. When you want to goof off, when do you want to goof off? You want to goof off at work, not when you're at home.
Right.
At home, you're watching TV, you're living your life. So anyhow, so my blog did very, very well. I ended up getting a job running a website called LAist. And LAist did so well that the LA Times hired me to run all of their blog. So I was the blog editor of the LA Times for close to 4 years.
So LAist is yours still?
No. LAist was owned by the Gothamist people in New York.
Oh,
so New
got
York
it.
Had this killer blog called Gothamist, and they were looking to hire an editor because the LAist editor was leaving.
So you've had, you know, back to your link edit in, you've had these cool gigs, right? LA yeah, Times, yeah. KPCC, yep. Academy of Arts and Social Pictures. You're at Los Angelino now. Clearly these are cool jobs, but why have you not just gone all in TP Inc. or whatever? You know what I mean?
I like working for other people. I mean, my ultimate goal was always to work for the LA Times. In college, I was in the college paper and we won awards. It was super fun. We didn't have any journalism classes. We had no adults. So it was really the inmates running the asylum. And out of that creative spirit, a lot of journalists came. And so in my heart, my dream was always to work for the LA Times, but I just never thought that I was talented enough to do that. I didn't think I was a good enough writer. I knew I was different. The things that you love about me are the things that the LA Times would have hated about me. Everybody wants this stiff voice, this buttoned up, nerd. And I was a nerd in a different way, but I keep it real. And my writing is like that. I don't write like Associated Press. So I just never thought that I would ever be able to work at the LA Times. And so in my blog, I would talk shit about the LA Times all the time, because even though it was my dream, I never thought that they would ever even think about me. So I would like critique them all the fucking time. And I subscribed to the paper. I was focused. I was studying them all the time. And so when I was at LAist, I knew exactly how to make that successful, because the whole point was all of the problems that the LA Times has, you fix. If they're afraid of considering weed a real thing, if they have to joke about it every time they talk about it, if they're looking down upon it, do the opposite. Own it. Own fucking weed. Own all these neighborhoods. Own Thai Town. Like all the places that they won't go. Go and go hard. So we quadrupled the LA Times as number one blog, and I fucking let them know. I wrote him a letter. I was like, I don't know what the word is after quadruple, but I'm going to learn it unless you fucking hire me. Thinking, okay, they're going to let me like write on a blog, like kind of like on the side. They were like, run them all. And I ran them all, and we did great. We did great because it was the same thing. It was like, okay, everybody, same as people support. It was like, okay, everybody, be yourself. Don't be so boring. You know, half you fuckers smoke weed. Stop pretending like it's this like heroin. Like it's not heroin. You know it's not heroin. And we all know that booze is way more deadly than pot is. Like, can we like just be real out there? And they're like, why should we listen to you? I was like, fine. I'll go right back to LAS and I'll fucking whip your ass even more. Except this time I know the names. I know I will call you out by name as we kick your ass. And so.
So what happened in 2011 that you left, or they fired you, or what happened?
What happened was a bit of a mystery, because when I showed up, the blogs were accounting for maybe like 4% of the traffic at the LA Times.
Wait, 1 second. You can say hi to my other son.
Yeah, good.
Where's that one?
It's
come say hello. You can see what's happened in the last 13 years.
Hey there. Wow. Looking good.
This is Jackson.
Jackson, what does your hat say? Who are you repping?
The brewery in our neighborhood. Best End Brewery.
What is Joe Exotic on there for?
You don't like Joe Exotic?
I mean, he's a cool guy, but like.
There you go.
He has a whole zoo in his.
You wouldn't have a zoo in your backyard if you didn't want one? You don't want a zoo? I don't want a zoo either.
All right, see you later, dude. Which house is this, Jackson?
It's on Aiden Street, but it's a few blocks. It's like 8585.
Okay, see you later. Please leave the house. Never come back.
Oh, my God.
Dude, my kids are horrible. I still haven't gotten to that. So
I think what happened was this, was after 3.5 years, our blogs really, really got big. And we're 50% of the traffic coming into LA Times were coming into my blogs. And it's kind of this, I think it's a psychological thing where you can have like this little toy that nobody cares about, but when it turns into like this like beautiful, monstrous thing, then suddenly people care about it. And I think that my boss was like, wow, Tony has a lot of power. He is running half of the website all of a sudden. I would like that power. And so my boss kind of sold me out and demoted me to just being a blogger. And I was like, that's not much of a demotion. That's like making Barry Bonds only a designated hitter. He's still going to fucking hit.
Crush it.
And so when I was just blogging politics there, I did really, really well. And then he let me go. So it was something that I didn't see coming, just like at People Support. I thought that at People Support, here I helped build this beautiful thing. Just be honest with me and I will grow with you. And at the LA Times, a similar thing happened. But it's totally fine, because I still can't believe that my dream job came true. And not only that, but it was hugely successful. You know, like it's I mean, we can talk as men. Sometimes we end up with the girl that we want at the bar and we take her home and it's not beautiful. It's not either we are bad at the situation or she pukes on the bed. Like something rarely does beautiful things happen when you get the thing that you think you want.
Well, I want to talk to you about this exact point.
Great.
Because I woke up one day and found out I was a journalist. Okay. So did you click on anything, and it's fine if you didn't, on what I do now?
No, huh?
Okay. So I have a company called Obstacle Racing Media. Do you know what obstacle racing is?
Is this drones?
No.
Damn.
But one of the guys that started one of the big drone things came from this company called Tough Mudder. So have you heard of that?
I have heard of that, yeah.
Okay. So let's go to Let's go to, where the hell is it? Okay. So have you heard of, trying to go into their website. You can see what the hell they do, but they always have other shit going on. Mm-hmm. Let's go share screen. There we go. Okay. So this is obstacle racing. Okay. People jumping over walls, right? No.
I mean, okay, I'm very light-skinned, but I'm black, and I can hear all of my relatives right now saying, white people.
It is a silly white people sport. It definitely is, okay? Which is one of the reasons they've had, oh, there's a black
guy.
There's
a brother.
There's a brother. All right, but you've heard people do this.
I've never heard of this.
At
this
all? Is At
this
all?
This is hilarious to me.
But you said you've heard of Tough Mudder, which is similar.
Yeah, and I laughed at that guy who was doing it, too. I just saw stills of that. This is, you know, animated GIFs.
All right.
I mean, I guess this keeps you in shape, which is good.
Right. So, for a much longer story that we'll save for another time.
Okay.
In 2011, I had a staffing company. Okay. We hired people for trade shows and experiential marketing events. And I had made that company totally out of my ass, and it made decent money, but I hated it. I hated the staff. Ah. I hated my clients. It was soul sucking. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Me and a friend sign up for this race. I do it. I do another one. And in June of 2012, for reasons I couldn't tell you, I thought, I should do a podcast about this. Seriously, dude, I have no... The only podcasts I knew existed at that time were This American Life and Marc Maron, and I listened to those religiously. But yeah. I just thought, wouldn't it be fun to talk to people about this sport? There probably isn't one yet, okay? Mm-hmm. There wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. And very soon I became that guy. Oh, you're the podcast guy, right?
Nice.
So that became a blog, which became, wait a minute, I think this might be something... And I went all in on it, okay? So I'm still that guy 8 years later. They came to me and said, do you want to write a book? I said, sure. There was a documentary made. I got to be in this doc. I was a talking head in this documentary. Am I pointing to it? Right there.
Sufferfest. Rise of the Sufferfest.
Right. And so in this world, everybody knows who I am. Outside of this world, not so much. But if I show up at a race, people are like, hey, Matt B. Davis, I'm that guy, right?
Nice.
But here's what's interesting. I started writing, and once in a great while, I would get reached out to by one of these like mainstream media, okay? Runner's World or Muscle and Fitness. And they were like, hey, this guy would be like, hey, I'm writing a story. Can I get a quote? And I'd give him a quote. And the rest of the article would be like garbage. And I'd be like, man, I sure would like to write for one of these things myself one day. And sure enough, one day I did. They're like, hey, can you do like a top five races you should do and blah, blah, blah. So I got to do a couple of those. Then, and I still thought like it would be great if I got to do more. And I went to this event and I said, hey, I'm going to this cool event and I'd like to write about it. And so I wrote this whole, it was this weekend experience thing and I wrote all about it. And they're like, we don't want it. That's not what we want at all. We want you to do it this way. So I was like, okay, like, what do I care? I'm a hired gun. So I wrote it the way they asked. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to use it, but we'll, you know, kill fee for it.
Yeah.
And then I started looking at their website and it was like a bunch of clickbait.
Mm.
How many dates? How to date a runner, right? And shit like that. And I just sort of looked up around me and I was like, fuck them. I'm going to put this on my website and I'm going to do me, right? Good. And I've kind of kept that the more... And then guess what? Like a year later, Runner's World is now behind a fucking paywall. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? So I have lost all respect almost for mainstream media. And it was kind of like a big F... Like, it's like a big F you to me. Like, I'm just going to keep cranking out my thing. Even though my stuff will never hit the numbers it would hit on there, I'd rather make my way.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what your experience is, you being you.
Well, mainstream media is in a dilemma because it's hard to make ads. It's hard to get ads. It's hard to make money off of the ads. What we consider mainstream media, magazines and newspapers, had a really good 100-year run.
Right.
You know, and very few things have 100-year runs. And even fewer things have 150-year run.
I have to interrupt you really quickly because the thing that I did between as my like make money while I was going in between, I drove for Lyft and Uber.
I did too.
Dude. And people would say like, I sure feel bad for the cab drivers. I'm like, do you feel bad for people who made phone books? Like, what is there to feel bad about?
So when I was doing social media for the Oscars, at night I drove for 5 years. I loved Uber and Lyft. I loved it, especially in the earlier days of it where you could actually make money.
Dude, the early days were amazing. I'm surprised we didn't ever run into some of the same people because there was this Lyft group, and like we made this cool Facebook group from some LA people and some ATL people. And it was hilarious because we were just making fun of all the people in the regular Lyft groups. But do you remember the floor?
I would have loved that group because I was in like five groups. And it was the signal to noise was like mostly noise. And every now and then you'd get an interesting.
Right. We plucked a few key people out of like groups. But do you remember the floor?
The floor.
You made money per hour, whether you got a ride or not.
No.
Oh, you must have come in after it. We had it.
Was this an LA thing or an Atlanta thing?
You guys had it too. But it was like, listen, we got to get these people to work, but there's not any rides yet. So you're going to make $15 an hour during the day and $20 an hour at night. And
maybe,
we would all hang out at coffee shops and be like, all right, I guess I got one. Get one, come back to the coffee shop. I'm not kidding. It was amazing.
Maybe because I wasn't full time, I didn't.
It didn't matter. Anyway, back to okay. The job. So they have their 100-year run and they're mad because now they can't figure out a way to make money.
Yeah. And all it is you got to adjust.
Right.
And the thing is that a lot of people don't either know how to adjust or they truly don't want to adjust. And even at the LA Times, when I showed up, I had a great boss named Meredith Artley, who now has been running CNN.com for a number of years. And she totally got it because she helped the New York Times go digital. And then she did it in France just to show off, you know, in French. And so she totally understood. But even when together we were at the LA Times, there was a lot of print people who were like, well, why should I make Steve Lopez blog? He's our number one guy in print and he writes twice a week. And that's enough. And I would say, well, this is why. It's because Tony Pierce can write something that gets more traffic than Steve Lopez. How does that make sense? Even I know I'm not as good as Steve Lopez, nor will I ever be. And so if we are in the business right now, unfortunately, of getting eyeballs onto the page, because that then increases the ad revenue, maybe out of 10 Steve Lopez pieces, two of them should try to get a wider audience than what he's trying to do. I'm not going to tell you what he should write about, but if eight of the things are about homelessness, which they should be, but if homelessness doesn't get you on Matt's Facebook page, then maybe we should try to figure out, what does Steve Lopez know? I mean, he's lived here forever. He can write about anything. He's fucking awesome. Can you give us a couple of hits, you know? And so it's like, it's like if you're Frank Zappa today, oh, that's good. But can you write us one hot hit single?
Right.
Even if it's a parody, like, what, can I get one hit single? And so I wasn't trying to dilute the quality of coverage. All I was trying to do was expand it. And so the boss who ended up screwing me over did have a couple of good sayings. And one of the sayings that he had was, fish where the fish are. So if all the traffic is trying to find out something about that topic, let Steve Lopez talk about that topic.
Right.
And then he can go back to homelessness for five more pieces. And so anyhow, a lot of the old school guys there did not understand that dynamic. And I tried to put it like this. I tried to say, okay, guys, we're running a restaurant. You're making the greatest vegetarian food, the greatest, but you've got no dessert. You're making people sit in the sun and you're charging a lot of money and you're wondering why LAist is running circles around you.
Right.
It's not because,
but this goes back to why you didn't become, you know, whoever a famous fucking blogger writer is now that then launches a podcast, gets asked to be on TV shows. Like why aren't you that guy?
Well, I think also I don't want to be that guy. I want to try. Same as people support. I want to help people. And so I went to the LA Times like saying, I'm not looking to do anything other than get the world to read what you're writing. You're writing the right stuff. You're just not, you're making the greatest vegan fucking soup there is.
But I'm saying if you're cranking out
people
these,
don't want that.
But listen, dude, if I'm following your fucking Tumblr thing that you have,
yeah,
here's a guy who's soulful, thoughtful, creative, funny, all the things you are and can do it consistently.
Yeah.
Why not do that and make a bunch of money at it or some?
Right.
If you've got the passion to do it consistently, which is everybody who starts a blog, podcast, whatever YouTube channel yesterday and today, they run out of steam in 3 months, right?
Yeah. I think it's twofold. Again, I'm not the pencil neck geek that's going to come in there with the slick back Christian Bale hair and say, fellas, this is how it's got to be. When people see me and hear me, they're like, we can't believe that you kick our fucking ass all the time. And I'm like,
I'm not saying for anybody. I'm saying for yourself. Why don't you do that?
Like me create my own website that kicks everybody's ass.
Yes. And also pays you.
It's harder than you think.
Dude, what are you talking? This is what I do for a living. And it's about a niche sport. And I figured out how to way to scratch and claw and feed all these motherfuckers. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But it is. So this is me saying, like, to this guy, hey, would you, you're an amazing Golden Glove, and you're just like, nah, I just want to be the designated hitter. Don't put me on the field. I just want to, I'm cool.
Well, with I think the problem is that I am trying to work within that structure. I am trying to be a player in Major League Baseball, but Major League Baseball is totally different. And in the blogging world, there's a lot of leaks, you know, and by the way, blogging is dead now. So that skill set is kind of out the window. And so I was able to adjust when I went to the Academy Awards. The Academy of Motion Pictures had, I think, something like 300,000 Instagram followers, let's say, when I got hired on. And they had been doing it for a couple of years. And I was like, this is crazy. Here's the fucking Oscars. But I had a really, really good boss who was like, you're right. It is crazy. Let's blow it up. Let's try all new things. And I was like, I am your man. He's like, I know you're my man. There was 1,000 people that auditioned for that job. I got it because he got that I was on his page. So we blew it up and we increased followers by 4.